From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
And welcome, everybody, to the show. We got another jam-packed one for you. We've got Larry Johnson, ex-CIA officer and worked in the State Department via counterterrorism on in the first hour. Then we've got a really good buddy of mine, an academic out there, and really one of the best political analysts that I think works in the global sphere of reality. That's going to be Stuart J. Hooper. We're going to be talking about all sorts of things today, from obviously what happened in Baltimore, the Moscow mall attacks, and we're going to get into some biotech developments that, well, they're commercial developments, but they're not the kind of developments I want to see going forth. All that today on the show, but I want to open with Julian Assange. You know, originally I was going to talk more about biotech, but every time I'm reminded of what is continually happening to not only Assange, not only WikiLeaks, but free speech globally, I cannot help but make that the issue. It is not a coincidence that when we saw the writings and the speeches of the then upcoming tech oligarchs, such as Eric Schmidt, for instance. Eric Schmidt was a big one about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, etc., and misinformation and disinformation. Well, a lot of people want to talk about Chinese-style censorship. I got news for you. Ain't just in China anymore. When you're using that term, it is dated. It has happened here in this country, in the United States. It has happened broadly in Europe and Canada. And that's because we really have not stepped up to the plate when it comes to entities like WikiLeaks and people like Julian Assange. We allowed not only his character to be assassinated through false claims of sexual assaults, but then essentially said it was okay that he had to go into hiding in an Ecuadorian embassy. And remember, all of this spans administrations, okay? Because we've had organizations, you know, WikiLeaks isn't the only one out there. Cryptome, for instance, released a lot of documentation and worked with Assange back in the day, by the way. But they never got the legs that WikiLeaks was able to do and put everything into the forefront. And that's also why you see people like O'Keefe with all his faults being targeted. Why? They're effective. They bring eyes to the scene. And the final and last straw was, in fact, that video that clearly showed innocent people being targeted and killed, journalists amongst them, by the way. Now, I want people to kind of fast forward now and think about how there's no outrage that that video, which is very horrific when you watch the whole thing, and I would encourage people, if they don't know what I'm talking about, to go check out The Trust Fall, which is a documentary film about Julian Assange, and really breaks that video down, start to finish, even what went into the media and didn't. Well, I got news for everybody. Right now, you don't have to look hard to see high def in color footage of insta-death being rained down from the sky, drone style, in Gaza, and not to terrorists, literally people walking down the road. Now, this may be being suppressed in this country, but again, as long as we have a global network of communication that challenges this, we can still at least talk about it. There's no outrage. That's the problem. Unless we get outrage on that issue, unless we get on the outrage scale of Julian Assange being extradited here via the Espionage Act when he is not a U.S. citizen. I mean, we are in cartoon world here, folks. Think about not a U.S. citizen publishing documentation that is real, not even contested. Back in the day when they got caught, they didn't always use that tool of Russian disinformation. Wasn't like the Biden laptop days, everybody. They just said, no, we don't like this. He's a non-state actor. And then they tried to associate him with Poot. It will be the end of free speech, possibly globally, on a scale we cannot imagine. If we bring him to a kangaroo court, okay, and prosecute him in a system that has 100% conviction rate. So now's the time to stand up, ladies and gentlemen, in every country, especially in this one that calls itself a democracy and we have free speech. We'll use it for something other than to share cat videos. What do you think about that? I don't know. It's kind of revolutionary stuff, except for not even a revolutionary, guys. Best case scenario, I'm a total reformationist. And if you want to know what that is, you can watch more of Jason Burmis Monday through Friday here at TNTRadio.live. Give us a follow on social media. Support this broadcast. I've done a lot of shows. I've talked about this before. If you do not support alternative media, guess what? It doesn't stick around. So better yet, don't just go follow, retweet, share the stuff. And if you can, make a donation. We'll be back with the headlines after this on TNT Radio.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
In the wake of the tragic collapse of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge on the morning of March 26th, curiosity continues to build as to exactly what caused the incident, with more than a handful of wild theories starting to emerge online from all the usual suspects. But maybe we should be less concerned with what has already happened and more concerned what will happen in the future. Trade routes. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT news producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thanks, Jason. I changed my mind about that whole thing. I think this is a giant, huge psyop. It's a false flag. It's a huge conspiracy. Clearly, terrorists preemptively planted charges on the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, hacked a ship all at 1:30 in the morning, all to distract us from P. Diddy. What do you think? Am I onto something? that's at least one of the theories that are floating around out there. So let's be serious for a minute. There is a real elephant in the room that needs to be discussed. So I'm happy that we're going to be tackling this. As of today, Tuesday, the Maryland Department of Transportation's Port Administration has confirmed that vessel traffic in and out of the Port of Baltimore is suspended indefinitely. This as U.S. federal and state officials deal with the aftermath of the collapse of the aforementioned Francis Scott Key Bridge. U.S. federal and state officials deal with the aftermath of the collapse of the aforementioned Francis Scott Key Bridge. The quote-unquote mass casualty event, as I've seen it described, is not only a tragedy with rescue efforts still underway, but an infrastructure crisis that's shutting down sea traffic at one of the world's busiest ports. Ah, of course, the bridge did collapse earlier today, Tuesday, March 26th. Is that the date? Yep. After it was hit by a cargo ship, the Dolly. Interesting names with all of these things. I don't blame the conspiracy theorists for going crazy. The vessel was chartered by Maersk and was leaving the port loaded with cargo. It was crewed by workers employed by Synergy Group, which confirmed that its 22 employees were uninjured. And various media outlets confirmed is a woke company. So we have that thing going on, too, just so you know. Anyways, I don't think that's related to it, but we're going to see a lot of that. Six people performing repairs and other work on the bridge are unaccounted for. That is according to Maryland Transportation Secretary Paul J. Weidefeld. Now, this is a problem, a huge problem, actually. Analysts say that any prolonged problems at the Port of Baltimore will cause reverberations, ripple effect, basically, across the country, namely the mid-Atlantic states. As I heard you coughing, Jason, yes, this is going to affect the supply chain. Here's an example, some experts who are sounding the alarm. Let's start with Patrick Penfield, a professor of, are you ready for this? He's an expert. He's a professor of supply chain management at Syracuse University. Speaking to the outlet Quartz, he said, quote, the Francis Scott Key Bridge tragedy will impact many supply chains on the U.S. East Coast. Over 11 million vehicles use that bridge on a yearly basis, and it's a critical road for the Baltimore transportation network, end quote. Similarly, Lars Jensen, the CEO of Vespucci Maritime, on he wrote a post on LinkedIn. Yeah, people still use that, if you can believe it. They said, quote, "This is a major disaster and will create significant problems on the U.S. East Coast for U.S. importers and exporters. The bridge collapse will mean that for the time being, it will not be possible to get to the container terminals or a range of other port terminals in Baltimore." End quote. It also means, according to Mr. Jensen, that cargo is gated into the port. That cargo that is gated into the port terminals will have to wait for a quote unquote unknown period, or quote, be gated back out and shifted to a different port. In case you're wondering how busy this is, I had that pulled up. Give me one second. It handles the port, handled 52.3 million tons of foreign cargo worth $80 billion last year. Every month that the vessel traffic through the port is shuttered, more than $6 billion of cargo doesn't pass through. So, Jason, does this mean we're going to see people fighting in the grocery stores over toilet paper again?
I really hope not, but the supply chain issue could have reverberations, but it could also just mean inflation across the board. And as far as the event itself, look, I've made no decisions as to what has happened. What has surprised me, I realize that this was very late or early, et cetera, and obviously not a highly trafficked area at that point, but we've only seen really grainy video. Right. And sometimes it's slowed down. It's social media-fied. So it's got like a trippy backbeat, et cetera, et cetera. And like you said, people are exuding their wild theories on them. I think there are some really legitimate questions. Number one, even if this were to happen and nothing else, is that really how bad our infrastructure is that the entire bridge would simply collapse like that? We know that the United States is absolutely falling apart with its infrastructure. And that's one of the word plays that the predator class, the people that should not be in charge, but somehow are the powers that shouldn't be, sold their Inflation Reduction Act and their, their infrastructure bill, which was all repackaged Build Back Better nonsense. And really that Build Back Better was simply a slogan of, we're going to take all your money. We're not going to give you anything. We're going to create all these social programs that empower us and screw you guys. Oh, by the way, we're going to just keep printing money up indefinitely until eventually. And I've never really talked like this in the past. I mean, I had people calling into me, for instance, Adam, all the way back in 2008, 2009, talking about not wanting to pay their taxes because it was going to be the collapse of the dollar. Well, we now live in an era where we are just post where most first world countries printed more money, including us, in a 3-year period than they had ever printed in history before. That's the beginning of their country combined, guys. That's a combination that can lead to Weimar Republic disaster. Now, what people don't want to talk about, it was that policy, and Trump allowed that to happen. Everybody, you gotta pierce reality. Everything is really 25 to 30% more than it was pre-COVID-1984. I constantly talk about things such as water. Again, a jug of water that was at your local Target, Walmart, 24-hour store that doesn't exist anymore, by the way, guys. Remember, everything was 24 hours? Now I gotta go to a Quickstar if I want something past 11 o'clock, all right? It was 88 cents, $1.38, $1.34 right now. The dollar store doesn't have a lot of the things they do. And if they do, it's not only not $1.25, where is it? It's in the dollar and more section of that store, which is now $3 and $5. This is the reality we're living in, Adam. And look, supply chain issues, that's a great, I would say, excuse to further purge our economy.
Yeah, it's like death by 1,000 paper cuts, isn't it? Whether or not it was planned, we're not necessarily looking at individual controlled demolitions, but we're looking at a grand, long game that's been played for many years for like a controlled collapse of our society. I think they let this kind of stuff happen on purpose. I mean, I went to college and was studying engineering and stuff like that. I understand what goes into, you know, designing these things. This type of stuff is not supposed to happen unless you just let it, you know, you know, let it go, let it happen. Same thing with the wildfires that we see all the time. Poor forest management is causing a lot of these wildfires. So same kind of thing here, I think, with the infrastructure. And you're 100% right with everything you said.
And the other thing is, look, we're paying our taxes, right? That's a reality. What is the average American citizen getting for that ever-increasing chunk that gets taken out? Back in the day, the hard left would always say, you want roads, don't you? You want garbage, don't you? That's all falling apart. If there is nothing nefarious to this, again, at the very least, this should show people that our modern day infrastructure in 2024, that should be so much better, is so much worse than what we had 25 and 30 years ago, Adam.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately. But hey, Biden, he's going to build it back better, Jason. So we should be fine.
Four more years of building it back better. Adam Clark, thank you so much for joining us. He joins us in the next hour. More great stories from him. More great stories across the board here at TNT. Up next, we're going to have Larry Johnson, ex-CIA officer and State Department official in the Office of Counterterrorism. We'll ask him if maybe there's anything more to this, but I do want to also focus on what just happened in Moscow. Back after this with more TNT Radio.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, net zero climate agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk TNT.
This is generally the view of people. Oh, we don't know much about Assange. Well, you should know, because whether you know it or not, he is fighting for you.
For your courage and leadership and tenacity in journalism and publishing.
Since 2010, Assange has been held in progressively narrower, darker, colder, and crueler spaces.
He has been detained since the 7th of December 2010 in one form or another.
And we are now here after years of imprisonment.
WikiLeaks is a non-state hostile intelligence service.
I think the man is a high-tech terrorist.
A high-tech terrorist.
A traitor, a treasonous.
He has to answer for what he has done.
Assange faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes.
The U.S. government narrative about Julian is a complete fraud. It is a complete fraud from A to Z.
Julian took on the most powerful countries in the world, basically all of them.
We now have confirmed that there were plans to kidnap Julian here in the center of London, or even assassinate him.
No one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice. But the great truth teller sits behind bars.
If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
Julian Assange is a hero.
What if everything we thought we knew about somebody was a lie? Would we be willing to go on a new journey of understanding? This is a story of deception, lies, bravery, and a man who risked everything to bring the truth to light.
Mr. Assange shows all the symptoms that are typical for a person that has been exposed to psychological torture over a prolonged period of time.
He looked at me intensely and said, "I hate to say this." He then hesitated, visibly troubled and searching for words. And then he finally said, "Please, save my life."
May future generations have the ability to speak without restraint.
May our children and their children know truth and have access to information that leads to justice. Wherever Julian goes, free speech goes with him.
If there is a bird that is about to take flight, stretch her wings and rule the skies, may it be a peace dove and no longer a bald eagle.
If you think Assange is a traitor, he's a rapist, he's a narcissist, he's a hacker, I don't blame you, because you have been deceived. And if you think you've not been deceived, that's normal, because otherwise it wouldn't be deception.
It's time to switch on
today's news talk radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah. TNT.
Joining us now is Larry Johnson. He is an ex-CIA official and also worked in the State Department via the Counterterrorism Unit. Thank you so much for joining us. Before we even get started globally, and I definitely want to talk about what's going on in Moscow, what your thoughts are there. Is there anything more nefarious to what happened in Baltimore today, possibly?
Not really. I think the fact that the guy driving the ship was a Ukrainian, I don't think he has any incentive to try to make life more difficult for the United States. If anything, he'd be wanting to help open the flow of material and finances to Ukraine. So unless some evidence emerges that he was some secret asset of Russia, for example, I think this was just a good old-fashioned accident. I don't think anybody really anticipated you could knock the bridge down like that. I mean, if the thing went down like a house of cards.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's why I think some people are questioning it. Again, I've only seen it briefly, but like you said, it went down almost immediately. And obviously, there are a lot of wild theories out there. I'm going to hold my breath, wait. But again, the implications are still going to be very detrimental to this country, yeah. Very detrimental to the supply chain. What do you think the recovery time on something like this is going to be?
Well, it's going to take a while. Let me raise a different aspect to this. I was puzzled, I guess, sort of troubled by the focus of the nation on this one event, when it's really a metaphor for what's been going on in Baltimore for 20 years. Almost every major inner city high school in Baltimore, they got like only 2 or 3% of the kids can read at grade level. The majority read at an elementary school level or lower. The same for math. We have the equivalent of 100 collapsed bridges, but we're talking about human beings. And nobody has given one care to it. It's just, you know, let Baltimore itself as a city, any hope for its future collapse, but we're worried about this bridge. Now, I don't want to, minimize the economic disaster that this is, because Baltimore was a major port, and it was important both for exporting coal out of, say, Appalachia, as well as natural gas. A liquid natural gas terminal is there. So it's going to have some real implications on energy. But I think we really missed the more important lesson, in my view, that if we rebuild that bridge, that still doesn't deal with this nightmare of a social deterioration. As that ship hit that one pillar and it collapsed the bridge, the ship that hit the people of Baltimore was the one that attacked the family, where the two-parent family was crashed, crumbled, and society is in the process of crumbling in the face of that. That's why I raise it. We should not lose the sight of the human suffering dimension that's going on in Baltimore, and it's been going on for now 24 years at least.
Now, I would have to agree with you. Baltimore is a rough area for somebody like myself who does travel and go through that area quite a bit. You're not wrong. But you also see the deterioration of the infrastructure, not just in cities like Baltimore, but around the country. And I think that this is also, I mean, if that in fact is the case, we, like you said, it hits, the whole thing crumbles. The deterioration of the infrastructure in this country that, again, our tax dollars are supposed to be used to be keeping up, but we're not seeing that, are we?
No, in fact, my dog was going a little crazy here. what has happened is we've spent all of our money in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Libya, and now in Ukraine. I mean, we spent, you know, tens of billions in Ukraine, and we're not spending that on American infrastructure. We're not spending it on American education. So, you know, when we act surprised, gee, our infrastructure is crumbling because we haven't really invested in it. Instead, we sent all of our money overseas and wasted it overseas because at the end, after 20 years in Afghanistan, what did we get? We got run out of town. Same as taking place in Iraq.
And honestly, right now, especially with what's going on globally, there does not seem to be any end to this in sight. You mentioned Ukraine. I can't wait to get your take on what we just saw in a really unprecedented incident in Moscow. I mean, you look at the guys that got caught on this. Anybody that was doing this type of thing must have known if they had common sense, they would either be caught or killed. This was almost a suicide mission, at least in my opinion. We got to kick it to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Larry Johnson about what happened in Moscow. This is TNT Radio.
Now, where trusted newscasters deliver the day's news at the same reliable time. TNT Radio News.
That sounds awesome.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. A massive cargo ship, the Dolly, lost power and collided with the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, causing it to collapse early on March 26th. Shares of Donald Trump's Trump Media and Technology Group, trading under the ticker DJT, surged about 50% on NASDAQ in their first day before a brief halt due to the volatility. By 9:50 a.m. Eastern Time, over 6.5 million shares have been traded, valuing the company at approximately $10 billion.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
Over the weekend, when these reports started to pour in via social media and these videos were coming out, I believe it was Friday afternoon, of what was happening in Russia. And first of all, the whole mall on fire, then these gunmen indiscriminately killing people. I thought to myself, in this era, these guys are absolutely going to get caught. And then the media reports say that they were doing this individually for about $5,000 American apiece, that they had been paid half up front after the fact. ISIS takes responsibility. At the same time, you've got Zelensky out there pointing at Putin. Putin saying, yes, ISIS, but Ukrainian involvement. What is it past the noise? What do you think happened here? And what are going to be the repercussions of this attack? I mean, we even had media talking about false flags via Putin himself.
Yeah, well, the false flag via Putin is just nonsense. Because you ask yourself, what's Putin gain from it? I mean, what? He gains more incentive to pursue the war against Ukraine? Anybody that says that hasn't been paying attention to what's going on with the war in Ukraine. That's number one. I think this ultimately was a Ukrainian operation. They've had a long-standing relationship with some ISIS fighters going back to 2014. That's number one. But I also think the United States and the United Kingdom were involved. And let me tell you why. First of all, you have Vicky Nuland show up around the end of February, 1st of March. Putin's in for a nasty surprise. Okay. Then on March 7th, the U.S. Embassy in Moscow issues a warning. Hey, stay away from public places. There's going to be a terrorist attack. Now, I know about this from firsthand experience. So when I started at State Department in 1989, one of the first jobs I had was to come up with how do we warn people about possible terrorist attacks? Because at that time, it was less than a year since the bombing of Panama 103, and a lot of people believed that the U.S. government had told its own employees, hey, stay off that plane, don't get on, there's going to be an attack. And then people said, oh, the U.S. government protected itself. Now, that's a lie. That's not what happened, because I know of several U.S. government employees in top secret positions that died on that flight. So that's number one. And so what we came up with was, if we have credible information, but it's not specific enough that you can go out and prevent it, then that information needs to be released to the public. But as part of that process, you inform if it's going to take place in Russia, the first thing we'd do is we'd call in the Russian ambassador to the United States, brief him, have him maybe bring along his intelligence representative, and then they would cable that back to Moscow. And then we'd also have Embassy Moscow go and brief the Russian government. None of that happened. None of that. They did not call the ambassador. They didn't. Call in the foreign ministry. We've got two different people. The press spokeswoman for the foreign ministry, Maria Zakharova, she said, nobody told us, as well as Dmitry Medvedev, who was the head of, he's like their equivalent of their National Security Council. He didn't know about it. So that's number one. Number two, then you get this guy that was one of the attackers on the 22nd. And they've got him photographed there at that center, at the Crocus Center on March 7th. Was he doing surveillance or were they preparing an attack? Because there was a show the next day on March 8th with a guy named Shaman, who's sort of, he's a big rock idol in Moscow. And apparently the security was so tight that they may have avoided it. But then the biggest tell comes that within 55 minutes of the attack starting, the attack's still underway, the building's still on fire, there's still people getting shot, the U.S. government comes out and says, oh, it wasn't Ukraine. Now, I've only been following terrorist attacks since 1985, okay? So I only have a little experience with this. I do not recall a single instance in 35 years where we had advance warning of an attack, and we were able to tell who did it within an hour. Hell, it was many times it was a day, 2 days, 3 days. Sometimes it took a little longer to figure it out. But all of a sudden in this, it is, oh yeah, Ukraine didn't do it. Well, that implies when you're sending that message, Russians are going, well, if you know that, then you know who did it. Why didn't you tell us, number one? Then they trot out this whole ISIS business. And these guys, they took the ISIS photograph beforehand of them, except they were holding up their left hand. Anybody that knows things about Muslims in the Middle East, what do they use the left hand for? It's called toilet paper. They don't hold that left hand up like that. That's number one. Number two, the social media started getting flooded with these ISIS, documents. Oh, yeah, ISIS this, ISIS that. And the UK, France, Germany, oh yeah, ISIS, ISIS, ISIS. It was like having the Mormon Tabernacle Choir singing. They all lined up to sing their parts. This was a Western-backed terrorist attack, or at least the West had knowledge of it. It could have been that it was rogue within the Ukrainian ranks, because just 2 days before this, the Financial Times had an article where the Biden administration was complaining about, oh, yeah, those Ukrainians, boy, they're crazy. They're tough to control. They're going off doing just nutty things that we don't want them to do. Oh, that's convenient. You distance yourself on the eve of them doing something.
So then the question becomes, if ISIS seems to be a front, you know, how involved were these guys really in the planning? Is this somebody that they picked up within the last couple of months through desperation? And, you know, if this is indeed U.S. backed, this is full on terrorism. I mean, this is targeting civilians to instill fear in a population for what appears to be a political outcome, the very definition of terrorism, Larry.
Yeah, but that's been going on since 2014 in the Donbass. The Ukrainian military has been routinely shelling civilians. There was four or five months ago, there was a HIMARS missile attack on a theater in Donetsk. There was a woman performing, and the missile came in and hit her and hit the audience, killed the audience. So this was not a new terrorist attack against civilians. That's what I said. The terrorism has been going on against the Russian civilians for quite a while. Remember 2 years ago, the daughter of Alexander Dugin was murdered in a car bombing that was intended for him. There was a journalist. He was given a bust. He thought it was a present. It turned out to be a bomb. Blew up, killed him. And the woman, you know, again, she was selected and she cooperated in carrying out the act, and then, you know, confessed her sins. So, you know, the terror. That's why I'm saying this is a bigger terror event in Moscow. Yes, but they've had these before. You know, people forget that in 2002,
before we get into that, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we can talk about that. And I want to talk about the implications of what this event will mean for this conflict. I mean, are we on the verge of World War III? Back after this with more TNT Radio.
My name's Stacy. I'm 57 and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You and you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete. But it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
You are loved. You are valued. You are resilient. You got this.
You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides at aarp.org/careguide.
This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Larry, before we left, you were talking about the fact that this is almost a Nord Stream 2.0 event, where immediately they say this can't be Ukraine on one level, but then also an extension of targeting the populace. You know, we can talk about the shelling, et cetera, but this type of mall attack really goes after the heart of civilians inside of Moscow. So the question becomes, what is next? Because this only seems to be escalating. The United States States is nowhere near getting out of this conflict. We already know they're much more heavily involved, even on the ground, than they'd like to admit. The communication system is largely Starlink. So again, this is very much a Western-backed war. And to me, this is another step in the wrong direction. So what can we expect?
Well, what we can expect is that the Ukrainian army is going to be driven out of eastern Ukraine probably by June, that they'll be back across the Dnieper River, and that Russia will probably, they will have taken possession of Kharkov, and that they will probably take control of Kiev as well, and that the government of Zelensky will be forced to flee to somewhere like Lviv, which is farther west towards the border with Poland. What people have missed is that since the fall of Avdiivka, about a month and a half ago, the Russians have been moving forward and advancing at a pace that's really has not been seen at all in the last 2 years. And the Ukrainians can't stop them because the Ukrainians don't have air power. They don't have effective air defense systems. They don't have a trained manpower. That's a real problem. They are decimated in terms of casualties, and they don't have replacements in the pipeline to put on the front line that can pose any kind of credible opposition to the Russians. So, and we keep forgetting the West, we fight these wars tactically. In other words, we're going to give these particular type of weapons, and they can do this particular type of thing, but we don't plug it together in a strategy. The Russians fight wars from a strategic standpoint. They don't look at it just in terms of the military operation. They also look at it in terms of the political dimension. And so they've had ample reason before this attack to retaliate for the deaths of civilians that were killed and frankly, killed using Western munitions. So the United States is going to be humiliated, as is the rest of NATO. NATO pretends that it is a credible military force. It is not. We've already seen that they cannot keep pace with Russia in producing artillery rounds, much less artillery barrels, because at the rate the Ukrainians were firing artillery, they burned out the barrels. And so those have to be replaced. Well, there were no replacements. We're running out of Patriots. We're running out of HIMARS. And we don't have factories stood up to produce them. With the armor that's been sent over by the United States, M1 Abrams, the Challenger tanks, the Leopard tanks, Russia's chewing them up and destroying them. And so it's not like there's a great supply line standing by ready to replenish what's been lost. In contrast, the Russian defense industry has gone on a war footing. They're operating 24/7. They're producing in 1 year more ammunition for artillery, for example, than the United States and NATO combined by a factor of 3 or 4. So it's what we're looking at is a significant military defeat for the West.
So if NATO continues to put troops on the ground. For instance, France is about to commit troops, very unpopular in France, but Europe commits more troops. The United States continues to fund what it can. How much longer can this go on? And is there a possibility that there is an event somewhere in the world, Europe or the United States, that would get us openly involved in a hot war with Russia, especially in light of the election, maybe an October surprise?
Yeah, I don't see it. We're spread so thin right now, we can't even, we can't even keep Israel supplied. So Israel's the priority right now for the United States government, not Ukraine. And then there's the look at what our Navy's doing to stop the Houthis. Oh, that's right. They're not stopping them. The Houthis continue to shut down the Red Sea. And despite repeated bombings by the United States, it goes to show the limits. And many times you've got the United States losing a $40 million Predator drone that's shot down by a $500,000 missile from the Houthis. So what we're seeing is the United States is being exposed as having not the greatest military in the world, as I know Donald Trump has said repeatedly. We've got the most expensive military in the world, but certainly not the best, not the most effective. And listen, it was on display last year during the Ukrainian counteroffensive. it was touted that the United States was heavily involved with the planning. How did that turn out? We got beat, defeated, and didn't lay a glove on the Russians, because they had built up a defense, a three-line defense, and the Ukrainian forces never even penetrated the first line. But the United States and the West persist with their self-delusion. Oh yeah, we're going to stop the Russians. The more they put foreign troops in there, the Russians are going to kill them. The more body bags will be coming back. It's that simple.
So if you think that this is going to be a military defeat, when does our involvement end? What is the timeline that Russia basically breaks back through into Ukraine? And do they take Ukraine, or do they just take Crimea, et cetera?
Yeah, no, they're not going to take all of Ukraine. They really don't want to control west of the Dnieper River. Why? Because, you know, traditionally that was not part of Russia. Kiev was. Kiev is a traditional Russian city. But the rest, when you get farther west towards Poland, like Lviv, that city, that was Polish. And a lot of that territory was also Romanian. Russians don't want any part of that. I know the West continues to push this lie that, Russia's going to take over Europe. They don't want the rest of Europe. Why would they want it? All of that is one continuous headache. And having to deal with, you know, transsexuals and blue-haired people, they don't want that. What they've wanted and always have wanted and have insisted is, we don't want NATO coming to our door, no more than the United States would want Russia building a military alliance with Canada and Mexico on our border. We wouldn't put up with that. Well, that's exactly the situation we confronted Russia with, and they said enough. They drew a line in the sand, we crossed it, they punched us in the nose, and we don't have an answer.
Well, if you think this is inevitable, do you think the election will hold any weight as to what happens militarily with Ukraine and Russia in November?
Yeah, I don't see Biden and his team trying to escalate the war at all, because it would be a disaster. Number one, the vast majority of Americans are sick and tired of sending their sons and daughters to die in foreign countries. Number one. Number two, the Army can't even meet its recruiting goals now, because in their pursuit of this diversity, equity, inequality policy, what they've created is a message that's going out. If you're white and you're Christian and you're conservative, don't show up. We view you as the enemy. And, you know, the kids got the message, or at least their parents have. I know a lot of guys that served, and they're telling their kids, no, you're not going in. Not going to have anything to do with it. And, you know, the United States militarily is not ready, trained, and equipped to be able to sustain combat at the level of what Russia has been doing. And we know we're constantly saying that all Russia's a bunch of convicts and they're poorly trained and poorly led. Well, I'll tell you what, they've defeated the Ukrainian army that is a de facto NATO army that was supplied with NATO weapons, that was supplied with intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, intelligent information by NATO, by the United States. And with all of that, they still haven't been able not only to prevail, they're on their heels, they're falling back. And they don't have an answer. They don't have the wherewithal to mount a counter-offensive now. So I think the Biden administration, they're going to be distracted by what's going on in Israel. Because I fully anticipate that Israel is going to make good on its threat to try to invade southern Lebanon to engage Hezbollah. And what they're going to find out is Hezbollah is a formidable military force that Israel, frankly, can't defeat.
So you think no matter what happens in Ukraine, Russia is going to de-escalate. However, the Middle East is going to escalate. If Trump gets in November, is there any possibility of military de-escalation globally?
If Trump is allowed to have the people that he wants around him, yes. But see, the problem we've created in the United States is that, can you name me a politician that's come forward and said, hey, look, we need to sit down and negotiate and talk to the Russians? Anybody that does that is immediately accused of being a puppet of Putin, a tool of the Kremlin, a sellout. So we've created a political dialogue in the United States that makes it impossible to political solution. And actually, Ukraine and Russia had reached tentative agreement in March of 2022, the end of March.
Didn't Boris Johnson sabotage that one?
Oh, he helped, but it was Joe Biden and Lloyd Austin. And that's not my opinion. That's the opinion of two Ukrainian negotiators and both some Germans who were involved with the process as well. So this isn't coming from the Russian side. This is coming from the Ukrainian side.
So it was, you know, you just mentioned Trump and whether or not he's able to put the people in and get in. So first off, you think there is a possibility that he will be able to retake the presidency. And then you think that he needs to get the right people in. Now, I was not a fan of the vast majority of that administration when we were talking right. about the John Boltons and the James Mattises of the world, et cetera. This was more than troublesome. So
yeah.
Who does he need in, you know, I've talked about people like Mike Lee who want to get us out of the United Nations and is anti-war, Rand Paul, et cetera, those type of people.
Well, yeah, but he can't really afford to take people out of the Senate because you're going to need those senators to hold the majority. That's number one. And I think the Republicans have a good chance of controlling that. But you need people, you know, I'd say people like Doug McGregor, bring Kash Patel back in. There are some folks out there. I'd even try to get Mike Flynn to come back in, but after what he's gone through, I don't think he has any stomach for it anymore. But there are people out there that could fill those positions. I know for a fact a friend of mine who was a senior intelligence official spoke to Trump very early in his administration, telling him, "Hey, you need to clean house. You need to get rid of a bunch of these people." Frankly, was very naive. He thought through the power of his personality and his salesmanship techniques that he could bring these people around. 3 years later, it was in, I think, the Christmas party in 2020, right after the election. My friend ran into him, and Trump came up to him and said, "I should have listened to you." So at least that tells me Trump learned something from that experience. I think, you know, we've never had a candidate in the history of this country that's gone through such unrelenting attacks. And part of the reason they're attacking him, I believe, is deep down, Trump is not on board with this, "Hey, let's send every American dollar we can overseas to fight foreign wars that don't have any reasonable outcome."
Larry, say what you will about him. Say what you will about the guy. He's the first president since Eisenhower to actually call the military-industrial complex, say right. that they were real. And even recently, talking about all these foreign wars, talking about blood and treasure, and that the treasure is never worth the blood. And quite frankly, we're not getting the treasure anyway. And that really reflects yeah. on what we began this conversation with.
Yeah, and that goes to the heart of why the deep state, why the intelligence community, why the law enforcement community, that they're trying to destroy him. Because the particularly on the side of the CIA and this whole national security bureaucracy, there's money to be made by having foreign enemies that you can then justify having now a $900 billion defense budget headed towards $1 trillion. And yet with all of that money spent, we're not safer, we're not more secure, and the world's not more peaceful. And so that's where we need to really step back and say, what is it that we're doing? What's our goal here? And instead, we end up becoming more repressive than the old Soviet Union was, locking up people for walking into the Capitol on January 6th and accusing them of being traitors and of insurrectionists when they weren't carrying a single weapon. And they didn't attack a single police officer. It was the Capitol Hill police that attacked them. It was a Capitol Hill policeman that shot and killed Ashley Babbitt. So, you know, this we got this upside down world where they've tried to stage a coup to discredit any supporter of Donald Trump. And in that process, they've intruded upon the civil liberties of Americans to an extent, you know, we haven't seen since maybe the Civil War.
You know, it is the inversion of reality, and taking it even a step further, when you look at not only the prosecution of some of these people on January 6th, but the judgments, especially, you can hate Enrique Tarrio's politics all you want. He shouldn't be spending 2 years in prison for not being at the Capitol at the non-insurrection. Yeah, we got a couple minutes left in the broadcast, Larry. What would you like to leave the audience with, and where can they find your stuff?
So I write and publish at sonar21.com, S-O-N-A-R-21.com. And my goal is to try to educate the public, because I've had the unique experience of working with the CIA, working with the State Department, working with the FBI, scripting terrorism exercises for U.S. military special operations forces for over 20 years. So I've got sort of a full picture view of how our national security apparatus operates. I've seen the good and the bad. I went with special operations forces into Iraq in 2006. So I bring a unique perspective, but ultimately I'm all about, I've got 28 ancestors who fought in the American Revolution. I am about preserving this country, keeping Americans safe, and focusing, let's clean up our own act at home before we dare to go out and try to tell other people how to live their lives, how to fix their countries. Let's fix ourselves first. Let's be that city on a hill that Ronald Reagan talked about that is really worth looking at.
Absolutely. And the whole thing is that we've got to look in the mirror, be our own heroes. And quite frankly, I don't want to go through another revolution, because they kind of got it right the first time with this constitutional republic. If anything, I am a reformationist. I want to bring back the three branches of government, the judicial, executive, and legislative. So there is real accountability. There hasn't been criminal accountability for a long time in this country. You talk about the deep state and that ever expanding aura of authoritarianism, which is totally against this country. Larry, thank you so much for joining us. There's more of the show coming up in the second hour. We've got Stuart J. Hooper and so much more. Back with this, with more TNT Radio.